You know, taking care of your skin is not that hard, but a lot of men don't do it because they're either lazy, they're clueless, or they're busy. And I probably have two out of the three of those.
I'm going to let you guess which two out of the three you are, Scott, but it's not because you're too busy. But Lumen has made it easy. They've done all the thinking for us.
They do. They've formulated products that are specifically for men's skin that target skin issues with maximum efficacy, with top-notch products, not fillers, not stuff. It's all good products. And they put it together to make it work for men's skin.
And skin is something you need to take care of along the way. We're out in the elements. We have sunshine coming down on us, and you want to protect it while you have it because it's tough to get back.
And Lumen has come up with these great products, a great product regime that you can use. I love their moisturizing balm. It smells good. I've put it on my face. I also put it on my arms. I just love the way my skin feels.
Even if you have no idea where to begin, Lumen makes it easy to find the right skin management system for you.
You can go to their website or give them a call, and they're there as advisors to help you. So you can take that clueless excuse and throw it out the window.
They've got you covered there, so you deserve to look and feel your best. And here's where to go to start. Lumenskin.com/TRN to get a 1 month free trial of everything you need to start your skincare journey at home.
That's lumenskin.com/TRN to get your first month free.
All right, we ready?
Yeah.
Poor miserable me, I'm having cramps. And this person over here is flying by me.
You're recording this, aren't you, Freeman?
I get everything. All right, we ready?
Yeah. Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott Warr.
I'm Don Freeman. And that was two claps, Scott, instead of just one, because we're on take two.
We're gonna edit the clapping out, so you don't know anything of what Don's talking about. Hey, we're with Alyssa Clark, who did something pretty freaking amazing. We heard about this from our friend and producer, Doug Mayer, and said, maybe you should talk to Alyssa. And this was a few weeks ago when this whole thing was going on. What that thing is a world record for the consecutive daily marathons. And Alyssa's been very kind to join us. Alyssa, thanks for joining us.
Of course. Happy to be here. I just want to say one thing really quickly. This is something I've been trying to be very honest about, is that there is a Danish woman that I found out, I think 89 marathons in, that is said to have run 366 marathons in 365 days. So hers is,
Wow. Yeah,
I know. Hers is an unofficial record. She chose to make it unofficial, and I am pursuing an official record with Guinness, but I always want to give her credit and never take away from what she did. So just want to put that out there. It is an American record and hopefully will be an official world record, but just making sure I do my part to acknowledge her amazing accomplishment.
You know how we could put this whole thing to rest? You just have to run 367.
Oh, goodness. You aren't the first person to say that to me, but I am a trail runner, and I have had enough of road running.
I bet.
Hey, so Alyssa, let's kick this thing off with how this all began. As I recall, or as I've done some research, this didn't start off as a record attempt. Is that correct?
Not at all. It did not. It started out, honestly, as a way not to lose my mind in Italy during lockdown.
So what was that like? You're living with your husband in Italy. Tell us a little bit about the lockdown there, and how did you feel, and why did you decide to start doing this?
Sure. So my husband is U.S. Navy, so we were stationed over in Italy for 2 years, and we were going to be transferred to the U.S. in May, which did end up happening. It was touch and go for a while, but so Milan is very much linked with China, especially with the fashion industry, so northern Italy started having a lot of cases, And southern Italy is actually very poor and has not quite as good of a medical system. And so they were trying very hard not to allow it to spread all over Italy. So we went into a big lockdown. So it was much different than the U.S. experience, because in Italy, with the government that they have, that they can enforce a full lockdown and you have to follow it. It's not state by state or anything like that. So we could only go to and from work, to and from the grocery store or the hospital. And you had to carry papers with you. And there were police checkpoints, police roaming the streets. My husband was stopped a minute away from our home. And they were checking paperwork. And you were not allowed to run or walk outside or do any recreation outside. So driving down the streets, heading to work, was like going through a ghost town. It was absolutely incredible. And it's just, I mean, it's what I imagine, like if a bomb had gone off and everyone was just hiding in their homes. Is
did you have the treadmill already in your home? How did you have access to this outlet?
So we were given this very old treadmill for free about a year and a half ago, and the wiring was off on it. So they said, you can just take it for free. My husband fixed the wiring. I didn't think it would last an hour. And then somehow it kept chugging out 26.2 over and over. So someone asked to buy the treadmill, and I said, no, it has a piece of my soul embedded in it. I can't.
The real story here isn't that you ran that many consecutive miles. The real story is the treadmill made it.
Exactly.
Well, so I have a couple of questions as we lean into this topic. Did you go into this fit, ready to run a marathon and maybe back it up with another one? Were you prepared, or was this something that grew as you started to put the days together?
So it's definitely something that I think I've prepared for. So I have been a runner since I was about 10 or 11 years old, played field sports, and I was a cross-country skier in high school. So I have a background doing, 3 to 5 hour trail runs at 14, 15 years old. I ran, not competitively, I played lacrosse in college, but ran on my own a lot, would do 25-mile hike runs on the long trail with my mom. And then I started ultra running right out of college. So I've been training pretty consistently, about 80 to 100 mile weeks since kind of 22, 23. So I think just years of endurance training and endurance background did prepare me to do the marathons. And then I was also preparing for a pretty big race season of doing 100 miles of Istria, Lavareda Ultra Trail. So I was preparing and felt in very good shape kind of going into the racing season. And then the racing season didn't really happen.
Mm-hmm. You know, like almost all of us, starting the season, getting prepared for these races, and then finally each of these races coming out and saying, we're canceling, we're canceling, we're canceling, we're canceling, and you've done all the work. Where were you emotionally as these races were canceled?
I was sad. It's funny how when it first started, right at the beginning of March, I didn't fully grasp. I thought there's no way. I mean, Istria is end of April. I thought there's no way that's going to be canceled. It'll be fine. There's no way Lavaredo will be canceled. It'll be fine. And so I think each one kind of came, and at the point that they were canceled, I knew that was the right decision. And so I think for the running community, for the bigger community, it's better that they were canceled. I was still disappointed not to get that opportunity, especially because it's a lot easier to travel within Europe to get to these races, and it's a lot harder to come from the U.S. So I may not get to run these races for a while or ever. So that was definitely disappointing, but in the long run, I know it was the right decision.
Now, you trained and you had quite a bit of base miles, so I was surprised to hear how much running you were actually doing. I thought we had somebody that was just finding an outlet and getting on a treadmill, but you sound like you were training up hard as an elite runner. Did you feel like, because running on the trail is a bit different than running on a treadmill. I mean, that's why they have different words for it. Do you feel like you're getting, we're getting stronger on that treadmill when you started? Did you see your fitness change a bit to more specific to treadmill running?
So this is actually something I was just talking to a friend with, is that I've, you know, with trail running, oftentimes, especially the trail running that I like, it's a lot of hiking, a lot of technical downhill. And I would say I'm much better at that than I am at quote unquote running. But through these marathons, I feel I've actually improved my overall running. So I think I maybe walked like a minute or two in maybe one or two of the marathons, but pretty consistently I run between a 9 and a 9:30 during the marathons. And so that pace I feel very comfortable with now. And so I think that that's going to translate really well to other races, in that I've improved my running economy for the future. Maybe not my top end speed, not really my hiking or downhill, but just being able to grind out miles and be consistent. So,
yeah. Sorry to step in, Scott, because I just, so many questions just flooded in my mind. Do you put it at 1%? What did you do with your treadmill to make it simulate an actual, you know, road?
I had it at 1%. Yeah, because that seems to be kind of the number that is simulant of a road. I tried a few times playing with adding some elevation, but the fatigue does add up. And really, I tried to stay consistent. Once I kind of found where I was comfortable with that, like 4:10-ish marathon, I didn't really like to add time to that, because it, you know, if you can stay consistent, you have more time to recover. You have more time off your feet. And so I tried to stay close to that time zone, where I wasn't pushing myself to the point of exhaustion, but wasn't kind of dragging it out either.
I want to get back to the story, but before I do, as you're talking about that, brought up another question. What was your overall finish time throughout these 95 days? Did they get faster? Did they get slower? Did they alternate? How did that end up going?
So I think there was a period of like 3 or 4 days where I was within a couple seconds of, like, it was like a 4:12 in a couple seconds.
Wow.
It's funny because it depended somewhat on terrain. I ran a couple in a hillier area with an African dust storm back in Italy. So those were very slow. But then actually my 60th and 61st marathon were two of the fastest. I think they were 4:03 and 4:04. So it did fluctuate, and it's funny how I expected kind of a slow decline in pace. And some days I would just look at my watch and go, oh, guess this is going to be a little faster today. And then other days I go, oh, this is going to be a little slower today, but pretty consistent. I was surprised about that. The human body is a very good metronome.
It is a great metronome, and a great study that you're able to look at it and say, what did I eat last night? How did I perform? How did I sleep? How did I perform? So you got to see in a real condensed space what's the best for Alyssa. So many of us, the races are so far apart, it becomes kind of a loose interpretation, but you are dialed in watching this scientific experiment happen. What did you learn?
So much. Sleep is hugely important. I mean, it's such a contributing factor. If I didn't sleep well, the marathon was very hard the next day. Also, immediate feedback if I didn't eat enough. So if I was lazy about consuming calories or lazy about resting, I paid for it the next day. It was very good for me to learn. Another really important thing that I learned, which is something I haven't done well in past racing, is to take care of problems when they happened immediately, not to wait on it, not to sit on it. If there's a rock in my shoe, if I'm feeling like I need to eat something or drink something, take care of it now, because otherwise tomorrow's marathon could be a lot worse and it will decline from there. So I became much more proactive in fixing issues rather than just waiting for them to become massive problems.
Good.
To give some more background and understanding of what you did, let's get back to the story. So you're in Italy. It's on lockdown. You've been training for these races, and you think, you know what? I have this broken down old treadmill. I'm gonna run some marathons. And the idea, as I recall, was that you're only going to be in lockdown for a couple weeks, right? So you're going to just run a couple weeks worth of marathons. What happened after that?
Well, lockdown kept getting extended, so that really was a big factor. So originally, I started March 31st. Lockdown was supposed to end April 14th. So I thought 15 marathons. You know, I'd heard of people doing 30 marathons. I looked up the official record. It was 60. And I thought, there's no way I'm going for 2 months. That's so long. Mm-hmm. yeah. And then I think around April 9th or 10th, they extended till May 1st. And I went, okay, well, buckle up now. and then it got extended a little bit longer. And then around May 8th, 10th was when we were allowed to run outside. And then at that point, when you're 30 something in, you just got to keep going.
That's an interesting thing, real quick. Sorry, Don. At the end of the 14, did you have any hesitancy to say, okay, well, I did my 14 or 15 marathons, I'm good for now? But or was it just, oh, we're still in lockdown, I'm going to continue? Was there any decision made there, or was it just automatic?
It was pretty much automatic. That's also just how I am. I'm very much if a little is good, a lot is great.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah.
I forgot my other question, but right now I've got to think, what is your husband thinking? Is he scratching his head going, who did I marry? What's going on here? Or did he say, I could have guessed this?
So 5 months into dating, he crewed me for Hurt 100 for 30 hours, my first 100 miler. So he kind of knew what he was getting into. And it was funny, I came up with the idea of going after the official world record at around 25. And when I brought it up to him, he said, I knew you were going to do that. So.
Well, so this is something to know, and puts it into context, is, you know, you were doing these marathons indoor on a treadmill, but then you finally, in Italy, they finally said, okay, we can get back to a little bit of normalcy, and you took out outside and continued to do the marathons outside. Mm. Did you find that more difficult, easier?
So, good question, Scott. I like that one.
It is a great question. Harder in some ways, easier in others. So with a treadmill, actually towards the end, so I'm in Florida right now, so it is incredibly hot. So I did actually run a few marathons on a treadmill when we moved here, just because it's 100 plus degrees. And so I did start, my hips were starting to bother me a little bit towards the end. It didn't happen at the beginning, which is odd. So you do have the repetitive motion. Luckily, didn't bother me too much at the beginning, but a treadmill is very convenient. You have a bathroom right there. You have Netflix. Hmm. You have all your snacks. You have food. I had controlled temperature. So there's a lot of benefits to running on a treadmill. Outside, far more interesting. I mean, I love outside. Otherwise, I wouldn't be a trail runner. But you're dealing with a lot of factors. You're carrying food. You're carrying water. You know, you're wondering, how can I get away with a handheld? Are there enough places for me to fill up, or do I need to bring a couple liters? You know, do I need to start at 4 or 5 in the morning, and then I'm running into, do I need a headlamp? Is it safe to run here? You know, is there an African dust storm, which happened multiple times, both in Italy and Florida? So, and also too, the pavement gets pretty wearing. So, the treadmill can be a softer surface in some ways. So, you know, there really are pluses and minuses. And the treadmill, I think, gets a worse rep than it deserves to.
I've got to ask, which treadmill were you on? Or could you read the writing or had it worn off completely being this dinosaur treadmill?
So the one that I had at my house was a Gold Gym, but I've also used Life Fitness ones as well.
Do you see a difference in the treadmill? Like, oh, this is a sweet ride. I could go forever on this.
The Life Fitness ones were definitely a little nicer than mine, but open to any other suggestions.
Now, what about if you don't mind, Scott, your start time? Some more just a logistic question. I'm a procrastinator, and I would wait until I would back up 4 hours from when the clock struck the next day, right? I mean, I just put it off, and all of a sudden, then I'd get on it. So did you have a set time that you said, I start at 6 a.m. and I'm done by 10 and I'm done? What was your routine?
So it did change a lot, actually. So I was still working when I was in Italy. I managed a gym. So I would go in for just a few hours to make sure that everything was all set. Clearly during COVID, the gyms were closed. So there were times that I needed to start a little bit later, like 10 or 11. There was one day I started at 1 p.m., which was awful. I didn't like that. Since we were moving, I had to resign from that position. And so once I didn't have to go into work, in Italy it wasn't as warm as it is here, so I would generally start by 8 o'clock at the latest, 7:30 or 7. But in Florida, when it was much hotter, I would generally start at the latest 6 or 6:30, so a bit earlier. And then I have run one at 1 a.m. on a German Air Force base because we were flying, and that was the only time that I could run it.
Oh, my goodness.
See, there's a whole dynamic here that is just fascinating to me. The whole thing's fascinating. But right in the middle of this, you and your husband decide, we're gonna up and move, not across town, but across the pond to a different continent. How did you maintain the schedule through this whole move? Packing up, flying. I mean, you have jet lag to deal with. How did that affect
you? You have 24 hours to deal with. I mean, is there enough time to even do this thing?
Hence the 1 a.m. Well, I will say it was not our choice to pick up and move. The Navy kind of tells you what you're going to do, and that's what you do. So I set the parameters that because I started on Italian time, which is 6 hours ahead of the East Coast, I had to finish every marathon before midnight Italian time. So that would mean here I would have to finish every marathon by 5 p.m. Florida time. So that kept the consecutive days. Moving, my poor husband, the movers came to our house and I said, bye, I'm going to go run a marathon. See you in 4-ish hours. So he's a saint. he honestly picked up so much slack for me while we were moving because I was also very tired. I mean, running 95 marathons is basically living 95 days with runner's brain. And it's amazing how it really does take your cognitive functioning down a bit. Not in a bad way. It's just brain fatigue. The move was nuts in many ways. I didn't realize how tired I was from it until we got here. And about 2 or 3 days later, I was just completely worn out. But the actual move, I ran in Italy in the morning and then we flew. And also during this time, there were no international flights commercially from Italy to the US. So the military chartered a cargo plane for us. And there were about 30 other military families flying on the same flight. So we left Italy in the afternoon, and also our flight had been changed like 6 times, just because everything's just so nuts. We left in the afternoon, arrived in Germany at an Air Force base there at about 9 p.m. We got to the hotel, ate food from a gas station. I went to bed at 11, and said, and we had to be back at the terminal by 9 a.m. And the military doesn't really wait for marathon attempts. They, you know, that's not on their agenda. So
the Admiral didn't know about that, huh? He was unaware of your attempt.
So actually, the Admiral and the highest ranking officer in the Navy have both congratulated me on the marathon. Oh, so
well done. Wow. Congratulations, Alyssa. That's cool.
Wow.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's been a good news source during this time. So they were pretty, they've been very supportive. But again,
they have a new ship with a treadmill in the back that spins the propeller, and they say, if things go bad, if we don't have enough fuel, we have Alyssa.
Exactly. Yeah, so we got to Germany at about 11 o'clock, and, you know, my marathons have been consistently 4 to 4:15, and I went, this is going to be the time it takes me, 7 hours. I don't know why, but this is going to be the time. So I went, okay, I'm going to get up at 2:30 to get this done. And then, you know, when you have something weighing on you like that, you don't really sleep. So I woke up at, right. I think I slept about an hour and a half, woke up at 12:45 and went, all right, it's after midnight, it's go time. Strangest experience. I don't know if I was laughing or crying, but got it done, and then got on the plane and was awake. We didn't get to the States until about 30-ish hours later when you add in like time differences and all that. Then the next day, the marathon was one of the fastest I'd run in Virginia Beach. So who knows? I don't
know.
Wow. I have another logistics question, if you don't mind, about food. I mean, you went gas station food, which apparently worked for you. But how about your calorie intake through this? Have you been... had the luxury of seeing something you like and eating it, not worrying about it? Has it stayed about the same? What are you noticing with calories?
It was so nice for 3 months not to worry about that, of like, I want that, I'm going to eat it.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, oh, I can't do that anymore as much. Darn.
I know. On the long run, you go to the aid stations and you look and there's Oreo cookies that you'd feel guilty if you ate any other time, right? But on a run, you're like, yeah, I'll take 3 of those. I'll take 6 of those. And you don't have any guilt at all.
That was honestly exactly it. And I would go to the grocery store and be like, I want that. I want that.
Yep.
It was so much fun shopping. And now I'm like, oh, I have to eat vegetables again. Darn. I love fruits and vegetables. So it hasn't been too bad. But yeah, I really it was fun. And I think, you know, part of me goes, well, I should think more like this most of the time. You know, being a runner, you can eat what you like, but it certainly was another level above that, I would say. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Alyssa, I have a question for you that's been was top of my list here. I remember one time, and Don may even remember this, we were going out on a night run, and we were going with a friend, and the idea, she was leading the run, the idea was we were going to go for, I don't know, from this point to this point. I can't remember how long it was. It took a couple hours, so many miles.
Scott,
whatever.
You don't even have any details to this story.
No, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
It doesn't matter. I could make things up, but I want to try to be as honest as I can.
No wonder I can't remember it, Scott, because I don't even know one detail. I'm searching. Give me a fact.
Anyway, it was at night. I told you it was at
night.
Okay,
I got you.
Okay, so it was from this point to this point, and about 3/4 of the way there, we find out that we're not stopping where we thought we were going to stop. She said, no, we're going this much further. And I remember from that point on, it was just miserable because I had in my mind set, I'm going to run from here to here and I'm done. And my mind and my body were all synced up to run that far. And then you switched it up, or she switched it up, and it was hard for me to adjust my mentality and my body around that. You did this multiple times. You started with, oh, I'm just going to run for 2 weeks straight. And then you said, oh, I'm going to run. And then I think I read that you said, I'm going to go for the record, which was 67, did you say?
The record was
or 64?
60 actually before.
Okay. So you're going to say, okay, I'm going to go 64. And then I listened to a podcast that you did with your coach that you said you were going to just go to 75.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden I read, you've gone to 95. How do you get your mind wrapped around putting that carrot further and further away from you and staying motivated?
Yeah, so that's a really great question. I think that I got into the mindset that this was the way of life, that this is what I mm-hmm. do every day. Like, you go to your job for 8 hours. I ran a marathon. Mm. And so every day, I didn't take any marathon for granted. I mean, it wasn't counted until it was done. But I also every day woke up knowing that that's what I was going to do. And every day it felt right to continue until it didn't at the end. And so I think that that was kind of the mentality of it. And I will say that 61 was very hard. I really wanted to stop in many ways, not because anything was wrong, but because my mind said, you can stop now. Like, you did it. You're just, you know, doing this. I don't know why.
Quit piling on. This poor record does not need to be destroyed. Just get over the line.
Exactly. So there were definitely moments where I had marathons before the 60, I was like, all right, set. I'm just going to keep going because I've made up my mind on this. But after that, there were definitely moments of you could stop anytime you want to. You know, you don't have anything to prove. You're not really, you know, I didn't set out to run 100 marathons. I just was trying to find a number that felt right. And I think part of what did keep me going is that the marathons were kind of like a friend. And as a military spouse, it can be very challenging because we move a lot. Like, I'm moving to California in a few months with my husband, and we constantly give up our career paths. We're constantly losing friends, gaining friends. And so I think that, you know, through a pandemic, through a move, through leaving a job that I enjoyed, moving to Florida, which has some great trails, but I'm a mountain person. There's no real mountains. And so the running and the marathons were something that was mine and something that kept me going when a lot of things in my life were changing.
Boy, now is a perfect time to just mention and our appreciation for what the military families do. It's just not the service person, but also their spouse and their children and the movements that they make. And many times on the civilian side, we don't think about that or acknowledge it, and we should. So thank you, Alyssa, for doing that and sacrificing. And for the love of your husband and your country, you're willing to do it. And I don't hear you complaining. You're happy to do it. So our appreciation to you. And everybody listening, I'm sure, would extend that same thank you.
Oh, well, I appreciate it. I get to go to great places and meet some fantastic people. So I'm very lucky.
There's the spin that somebody that runs 95 marathons would do.
Hey, Alyssa, I was going to ask this question, and I was going to give you a multiple choice A, B, C, or D, and you just came up with an E and an F that I didn't even think about. My question is every morning when you got up, what was the motivation? Was it the goal? Was it the commitment? Was it a routine? And you brought up that it was my friend. It was a consistent part of my life. Did you think of it more as a routine, or did you ever think my goal is X and I'm going to get up every morning and start running in my marathon because of this goal? Or was it just because this is what I do? I get up, I have a glass of water or a cup of coffee, and I go run 26.2.
You know, actually, one of my favorite quotes I read in Scott Jurek's book, North, is, this is who I am, this is what I do. And I think that that was kind of where I was at with it. It was routine. It gave me structure in a time where many of us lack structure. You know, we're kind of, what do we do? Like, I was running stairs mindlessly in my house before I started the marathons because I didn't know what to do or how to cope. And so the marathons gave me a coping mechanism. It gave me a structure. It gave me a purpose. And that kind of carried me through it.
Did you have any injuries or niggles or, you know, the words that we use to describe some repetitive use that started to accumulate as you got deeper into this challenge?
Yeah, so not nearly what I expected. So overall, not really. I did have my right quad start to act up around marathon 50 and had a physio that sorted me out. I wore KT tape for a while, iced it, took some Tylenol, but really it cleared up quite quickly. General stiffness. I mean, getting out of bed, going down the stairs, I was very slow. It's amazing to run upstairs now. I forgot what that feels like. So yeah, but overall, I mean, really, really felt fortunate. And that was one of the caveats that I kind of made, was I won't continue this if I'm sick or injured, because this is not a great time, you know, to be going to the hospital, to be putting added pressure. And that's kind of what led to the decision with 95 and not 100.
Yeah, let's save that for a bit, because I think we're still on the leading up stuff. Foot care, any blisters? I know that when people run marathons, as we all have, sometimes you develop a blister, and those usually take a few days to recover, and then you've got to push yourself through another blister, probably in this or through that area, using the same gait and probably irritating the same area. Did you have any issues with that at all?
So, this is actually, so when I first started ultras, my first 100 mile, I resoled my foot. It was awful. I don't really get blisters anymore. I had a few very small ones, but I use Exoskin, and I swear by those socks and the compression sleeves. Whatever they're doing is magic, because foot problems were not a problem. Like, the tiny blisters didn't affect me, and they went away right away. I never had big issues with it.
Did you use the toe socks or the regular sock? Give us a little detail about that.
Sure. So I found that the toe socks were much more effective for me, and that's all that I use now. I have a pair of the regular socks. I found that my toes rubbed together a bit more, and I would get tiny blisters in between my toes, but the toe socks handled that perfectly.
Yeah, I experienced the same thing. As you know, I just did that long run on that Trueform Challenge and used the toe socks and kept my feet clean, blister-free for the whole piece. So
yeah.
They translate well. Treadmill or trail, they work.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned their compression sleeves. Are you talking the legs?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about those. I've kind of go with the trends. I'm kind of a trendy guy. Try to stay on top of fashion.
Very, very hip,
Scott. And so there was a time where I used compression leggings or socks, but I've kind of got away from that. I want you to tell me why you like them so much.
Leggings.
Yeah, leggings? Yeah, is that what they're called? I don't know what they're called.
You just lost your hip status.
What they're called.
Has been
my hip status just got thrown out the window.
So I use the calf sleeves. You know, I kind of go back and forth too on whether or not I believe in compression and all of that. But I found I just felt better. Also, it's just a little. It's added protection on your legs if it's muddy out or windy or anything like that. And so that's why I use them. I think even if it's a bit of a placebo, I think placebos are hugely important. I think they're underrated. And I think also, too, when I put them on, you know, it was marathon time. And that was part of my routine. And so I think that also helps you click into the mode that you have to be in.
Yeah. Getting your uniform on, going to battle.
Exactly. I always think of my camelback as like my suit of armor.
Very
it's like
good.
when I put it
ooh,
on, I'm going
nice.
To do something really cool that day.
All right, that's a nice attitude.
Did you use your camelback when you were on the treadmill?
No, I did not.
Okay, I'm just curious if you needed to put on the armor or not. I'm also curious. So you finished each daily marathons. Did you have a routine for post marathon recovery? Did you do some rolling, some icing, some massage? What did that look like?
Yeah, so the biggest thing for me right away was to get something to eat. So often I have a protein shake or just something quick right off the bat, then shower off, especially outside here. You're just drenched in sweat coming off being outside for 4+ hours. And then right after, eat lunch. I also use AMP PR lotion, so I would put that on for recovery. I stretched a little bit. I'm very bad at stretching, so
join the club.
Yeah.
It's a prerequisite.
Yeah. It's like, oh, I have time to run a marathon every day, but I don't have time to stretch. It's
exactly. The easiest thing, the easiest thing to do would be hold a position and don't move, right? But we neglect it. We'll do repeats on a hill, but we will not sit there statically and stretch.
Exactly. Other than that, so then after I would have a big lunch, snacks throughout the day. I tried, if I could, taking a 30-minute nap in the afternoon. Sometimes that happened, sometimes it didn't. Biggest thing is keeping off my feet if I could, and just relaxing, staying out of the heat if possible. And then I would go to bed at 8 o'clock, so very early, to be able to prioritize sleep. But yeah, it's funny. That's one of the questions I get the most often is, what did you do recovery-wise? And not anything particularly exciting. Like, there was no secret, oh, I did this and that's why I could do it. It was really just getting in a routine and trying to keep it easy. I will say one of the most important parts of my routine of the marathons was setting out my clothes and getting everything, nutrition, everything ready the night before, because I wanted to remove every barrier I could from starting the marathons in the morning. And that was like...
That is gold right there. That is really gold. I think that even if, most people do it when they're the night before their race, when they don't need the motivation, right? The gun's going to go off. That it's easy to get up. I think they do it just so that they don't forget anything. But I like that you set everything out so that is not a barrier or an excuse to get out and do the run.
Takes energy to get yourself together, and you remove that obstacle and you can just lean right in and start. You don't have to assemble and look. And again, procrastination is sometimes a challenge. And you could say, well, where are those socks? I'm looking for that. And so it's just best to have everything lined up, go to work, and get it done. I liked it too.
Absolutely. And it's funny, when I stopped the marathons, I had to stop myself from setting out my clothes for a 2-mile walk in the morning. Mm. Like, no, Alyssa, you don't have to do that. But it was, I think, one of the most key components of it was just saying it, because it then didn't give me an excuse not to go out. It was, oh, look, all my stuff's ready. I guess I just need to go.
I was going to get to the next part of the story. Did you have another question before we get to the next part of the story?
Here's what I want to know logistically, and maybe there isn't a right answer. Maybe there is. Maybe it's written down somewhere. What if somebody ran like 2 half marathons in a day? Would that count, or do you have to do it complete from start to end?
You know, I really don't know. There were some times where I thought about it, or I thought, maybe I'll start when it's still cool, I'll start and run half of it outside and then run half of it on the treadmill. But to me personally, and this was just my own decision, is that it didn't feel authentic to do it that way. And so once I started, I ran the whole thing at one time, and I ran the whole thing either like as soon as I started outside, I was going to end outside, or I started on a treadmill, I was going to end on a treadmill.
Oh, so you wouldn't even mix. You wouldn't even do half and half. It was, if it's an outside, it's an outside.
It's, yeah. So it was kind of, I wanted to keep my watch data as accurate as possible, like nothing to say I fiddled with it or anything. And so I didn't want to do multi-sport or start it or stop it. It was, it's starting at 0 and stopping at 26.23, because anything over a marathon's an ultra. So
very good. Okay. I like your integrity. I think you're absolutely right. Running 2 half marathons is a different animal than running one full straight. So I think you have set the rule that if you start out, you finish as you start, and you do it consecutive. Walking is fine because you know, sometimes we do that, and that's our strategy, right? But you have to start as you finish as you start. So that's the Alyssa rule, and we should just move on forward with it. Anybody wants to challenge it can pull back to this discussion and know the rule. So well done.
Perfect.
Scott, take us on the journey how it ends.
Yeah, so you've started it. You got shipped over to Florida in the middle of it. Now you're running in 100-degree weather with 100-degree humidity where you don't know whether that's sweat or whether you got rained on, because I know it rains a lot down there too. Where does 95 come in, and how did it – give us the finish.
All right, the grand finale.
Yes.
So I was – part of the reason why I went past 75 is I felt great. I was in a routine. I had my trail legs. Like if you do a long trail, like the Appalachian Trail or anything, I just was kind of – it's weird how you get so used to a distance. Like it felt like I went on a 10-miler some days. It just – it felt perfectly normal. And so in the 80s, I was feeling great, chugging along, and then – I'll go back to this. Florida right now is really struggling with COVID, and it's there's a lot of ways that we can improve down here. My husband goes to a school he's going to dive school, and someone at that school that he had been training with, which I mean, they do the best they can. They wear masks. The military is very stringent. It just happens. Tested positive for COVID. And he got tested, but they'd been trained together before. And then he passed it on to my husband. My husband passed it on to me. So at about marathon 94-ish, 93, I started feeling pretty badly. I was nauseous, temperature fluctuating, and lost sense of taste, which, again, all of those things can happen to you when your body is also tired from running. Like, you get nauseous from running. You can have temperature fluctuations. The loss of taste was kind of strange. That one was a bit of a tip-off. And then 94... I was coughing just a little bit after the marathon. Woke up on the day of 95. My chest really hurt. I was coughing a lot more. I set out and I was about 6 miles. Well, no, before that, I was talking to my husband and I said, I don't feel good. I'm not sure that this is a good idea. And he said, you have nothing to prove. You should stop. You know, who cares? So I did complete 95. Sorry. The day of 96 was when we had this conversation. And I started out and I went, this chest pain is not normal. This isn't something that I should push through. And so 8 miles in, I made the decision to stop. And I stopped right away. I did actually go to the doctor to make sure that everything is okay. And also, we thought that there was testing at most doctor's offices. Turns out there is not. And because we thought we should be tested for COVID, this seems like the symptoms. So I stopped, went to the doctor. They refused to test me. They said that I had an upper respiratory virus. You know, they gave me a steroid injection and that was the end of the marathons. I had said from the beginning that I would not run the marathons if it was going to put myself or anyone in danger. And that was the decision that I made, whether I was within 5 of my goal or 10 or 15 or any of that. So that's how it ended. A few days later, we were tested by another hospital. And just on Tuesday... so this is now 2+ weeks after we were tested, we found out that we were both positive.
Wow. And you're feeling better now, correct?
We are 100%. And I honestly, I feel so lucky that we really haven't been affected very badly by this and recovered extremely quickly. And I don't know if I would have had I continued to push the last five marathons. I think that it was the right time, the right place, and the right decision for me. And I'm very glad because I want a long career in running. And it's not worth, no record, no ego is worth that, your long-term health and the health of others. Because as soon as we started feeling the symptoms, we self-isolated, like had groceries delivered to our doorstep and did not go anywhere or be around anyone. So, yeah.
Very wise decision. Very wise decision. It'd be, you know, it could be very easy if you're at 95 and you say, it's only five more days, and just push through it and do some possibly irreparable damage. So very, very, very wise.
And kind of a metaphor for life, you know, sometimes you just have to take a hard pause, whether you want to or not, because it's better for the greater good.
Absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, I started this to inspire others to continue to move forward, to continue to remain positive, to chase after, you know, the reasonable goals that are safe and don't cause harm. And I felt that the marathons moved in a direction that could cause harm or encourage people to make unwise decisions. And so when I felt that I wasn't being true to the reason why I started, that was when it needed to end.
Boy, Alyssa, you know, I've got to say, you're a terrific person, and you never did any of this to shine a spotlight on you. You can hear it, you can see it, and your motives are pure and good. And that's what I think drives people to do hard things when they start to do it for another reason besides self-awareness or, you know, I'm not much of a social media guy, but you know, I imagine you probably didn't have 9 posts a day of you running from different angles on your treadmill. You just silently went out and did your work, and you let people observe and make decisions and opinions and pattern themselves or inspired to do other things. And I admire you in that. And so, well done.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And I've had, you know, what means the most to me is the messages I've received that said, I started a couch to 5K because I saw you running, or I've really been struggling and I read your message of one day at a time, one step at a time, and I'm still going. And those mean more to me than any record. I could care less about the record. I'm thrilled the Danish woman has said to have gone as far as she did, and she has multiple sclerosis. I mean, that's incredible. So, you know, it doesn't undermine either of our accomplishments. It's just different. And I am so grateful that another woman took on this challenge. And you know, there are some not nice comments that are out there. I try not to read them, but at the end of the day, it's, you know, I did this because I wanted to inspire people during a challenging time. And I think it has done that, and I'm grateful beyond measure for that.
Yeah, I think you'll be a shining light always at whatever you do, and it comes through. Scott, go ahead.
Do you think, Alyssa, that the coming down with COVID and having your body say I'm hurting and you making the wise decision to stop was, I don't know if I want to say it this way, a better solution than reaching 100 and then saying I'm waking up tomorrow, I still feel like this is the routine, and going into the new routine, which is not running a marathon every day? Have you thought about that?
I have. And so luckily, my coach did have a plan for me. So I was going to run 18 miles the next day, and then 14, and then 10. So I wasn't going to just come off it and stop. Uh-huh. I was going to wean off of it. So I still, first of all, my body's really used to running that. So I was going to slowly kind of come down from it. But you have to laugh at the whole thing. Like, it's so poetic that coronavirus started it and coronavirus ended it. Like, yeah. Couldn't be more of like a neat package than that. And you know, it's the disease is not a laugh, the virus is not a laughing matter at all. But in this situation, it's pretty ironic.
That's a fantastic story. Who's your coach to give him or her a shout out? So because they did a fantastic job running along with you during this.
Yeah, so I work with Sean Bearden.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, he's a great guy. And then I also have had Alex Luck. Actually, now Alex Barnett. She married Billy Barnett from Born to Run. Has also helped me a lot and been a huge supporter as well.
It's a small world, isn't it? Names come up and so people recognize, and that's a lot of fun. So good for having coaches. You know, a strong runner, even strong runners need strong coaches, and so you know that's good.
And off the top of my mind, I listened. So Sean has his own podcast. What's the name of it?
Super Science of Ultra Running podcast.
Yeah, Science of Ultra. Yeah, I actually listened to that interview that he did with you. And so if you want to hear a little bit more about Alyssa, this was in the middle of it. I think when you recorded it, you were at 65 days or something like that.
And I said I was
getting ready to break the record. Yeah. And you were going to quit at 675, I think is what you said on the podcast.
Yes, it was. And I said it so many times and my friends who listen to it go, "You're such a liar." Like, yeah, I am.
Alyssa, thank you so much for joining us. We really enjoyed the conversation and are inspired by that, and a lot of good knowledge and golden nuggets we can take from this. I'm going to start laying out my stuff every morning before my training runs. I think I'm going to take that and try to make that part of my routine.
I'm going to lay my slippers out in a bathrobe. That's what I'm laying out.
And make sure that the ice cream's in the refrigerator or the freezer.
Thank you, Alyssa. And we sincerely appreciate the service that you and your family have provided for us, and also the inspiration.
Yes.
And the old treadmill that was rewired by your husband to get out there and help you along the way.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it, and I'm honored to be a part of your wonderful podcast.
So now go out and run. Mas.
Mas.